welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is the all-new all-ball, all-basketball, all-time. This one's a really good one. Ron Baker, superstar, all-American, all-solar system at Wichita State, the Final Four, the perfect season, the Sweet 16. But also, he was there for, 5 years with Greg Marshall. And he's got an interesting perspective. He said some things I did not know he would say. And he wanted a chance to kind of clear the air and give his thoughts on what really happened and where he is mentally and emotionally with his basketball program. It's really, really interesting stuff. So do we want to get to the NBA draft? Yes. Yes. And I'll do a pod. We'll get to every pick. Literally every pick. Ones I like, ones I don't like, and what you can expect. Then we'll get to NBA free agency. Lakers doing quite well. I don't think the Clippers are bad or anything. I still think there's some adjustments they need to make. And maybe we learn something about what they thought was wrong with Montrezl Harrell going down the hallway, but we'll see. I'm not as big on Portland as other people are. I get the Gordon Hayward thing, but you're also not signing up for winning. You're signing up for more money. That part is interesting. So we can talk some NBA on a different pod. We can also talk college basketball, which is supposed to get underway today, the day of which this pod drops. But there's so many cancellations that does it really, really make sense for me to break down every team? Not yet. We will. Well, I'll watch a ton of hoop. I'll give you all my thoughts and some trends, and we'll continue to have outstanding podcasts. But I want to talk about this one with Ron Baker, who I got a chance to meet along his journey, and his basketball journey appears to have come to an end. So let's get after it. This is Wichita State star guard, of course, formerly of the Knicks and the Wizards and of CSKA Moscow, Ron Baker. All right, let's welcome him in. He's a legend, not just of Scott City, Kansas, but also in Wichita and in New York. And in Moscow, he's the one and only Ron Baker. Okay, let's start at the beginning, because I was there when we first met, was in Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City, yeah.
I remember you guys were getting ready to take on Pittsburgh in the first round of the NCAA tournament.
Okay.
And you hadn't played the whole season because you were hurt part of your freshman year. I was talking with Greg Marshall, and he was like, man, I'm telling you, like, this guy – we had no idea he was going to be this good. Growing up in Scott City, I know you're a great football player. Did you play baseball as well?
Football and baseball. Actually, a baseball family. My brother plays college baseball down the road here at Emporia State. And my dad played college baseball at Fort Hays State. Mom played college softball. So some people would say I'm the outlier. I messed everything up.
Maybe you're just actually an athletic family.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
did you play it. And then in high school? Okay. So growing up, like, I grew up, we had youth teams, and then it became travel basketball. And then, at the end, it was AU basketball, but not like it is now.
Sure.
Growing up, was it a rec team? Like, how'd you play basketball growing up?
Elementary was all rec based. Didn't travel a whole lot. If we traveled, it was mainly during the winter. And we had a thing called MAYB. Which was like similar, maybe on a smaller spectrum compared to like an AAU. So you go to like a Saturday in the winter to a local town and play against, four or five teams. That's basically, and then once you get into middle school, you start playing your middle school sports. But yeah, I was a three-sport athlete.
Were you big growing up? You're a big dude. So were you like the biggest kid in the court?
No. I was 5'8", 140 my freshman year of high school. One of those late bloomers. I think I grew probably 4 inches my junior year. And that's why I didn't play AAU, because I thought I was going to play baseball. I mean, when you're 6 foot, you're thinking throw, you're thinking baseball. But once I got into the AAU circuit, that junior summer, going to be senior, that's when I focused anything on basketball. But never.
What position in baseball?
Shortstop, pitcher.
Of course.
Of course, small town, yeah, right. Everyone's
top of the lineup, or a cleanup guy.
Batted mainly three or four hole, yeah. Yeah.
You drop bombs? I mean, you just cry. Were you?
Yeah, I hit a couple. Hit a couple in my day. Nothing to, you know, hang your hat on.
And then football, you're a really good quarterback. I mean,
quarterback, free safety. Yep.
Which did you enjoy better? I mean, quarterback or free safety?
Offense is always, I would say, more fun, but.
Yeah, but free safety, you get to lay people out. Free
safety, that's where I was probably my best at. Because as a free safety, it's kind of the same role as your quarterback. You see everything and you're communicating the most. And I really enjoyed free safety. Probably a little more than quarterback, actually, because you see everything. Yeah.
See, we started this 30 seconds ago. It was quarterback because it's offense. And they're like, yeah,
The more you think about it, free safety, yeah. Too bad.
Now, didn't you throw like a game-winning touchdown pass in your last game?
Not the last game. No, that was a routing by Smith Center. If you look them up, they're usually pretty good at football. But no last second TDs in my career. You might be talking about high school basketball. Yeah.
Oh, high school basketball.
Game winning putback. Yeah. The state championship.
Where was the state championship?
Hutch. You know,
Hutch in junior college.
That's where all the, you know, the junior college there, where they have the national JUCO tournament every season.
So at what point in your, when you start playing the AAU circuit, did you start to try and figure out what you wanted to do and where you wanted to go?
My first AAU game was against the St. Louis Eagles. I'm sure you've heard of Ben McLemore and Bradley Beal. That was kind of an eye-opener, leaving Western Kansas and going against those two. But once I started getting confident that summer and playing against that type of player, having good games, I think I just kind of dragged me to, you know, dedicating myself to basketball. That was kind of, it was more mental. Like, you can be good at something, but once you actually taste that success confidence, then it starts to drag you in that direction. And that's when that summer is kind of when I definitely made a decision, like, hey, mom, dad, basketball's what we're going to do. So let's focus more.
What'd they say?
They just wanted me to be who I was and be myself. And I felt basketball was where I was leaning towards.
So, what's the real story behind the Wichita State thing, right? It was because how Greg pitched it to us back then was, hey, we don't have a scholarship, but you come walk on for a year and then, you know, 5 for 4, which you redshirt, right, and they put you on scholarship for 4. What was the actual conversations like and how did it come to be?
So Chris Jans was the guy that recruited me, the head coach at New Mexico State. Yeah. He had actually come and watched me at Hutch play in the state tournament. And then Marshall came with him to the state final. And they were, you know, big fans of mine. Coach Marshall's father-in-law was actually the one that was pitching me the most. He was such a big fan of me. He was, you know, telling these two coaches, like, hey, this guy, we got to get him in here. They'd already maxed their scholarships out. Because I'm a senior and this is first week of March, right? So, I mean, everyone's pretty much committed or already given out their scholarships. South Dakota State, Arkansas, Little Rock had already offered, and I was, you know, wanting to stay more close to home. Came on a visit here, unofficial, pretty much cut and dry. They kept it 100 with me. They said, you know, we've already dished out our 12 scholarships, 13 scholarships, whatever it is. And, you know, we'll need you to pay your way this first year. Like, it is what it is. We don't have any scholarships, obviously, but we want you to be here. And I remember my parents being with me on my visit, and they just adored those two guys, Jans and Marshall, and just how they treated them. Really enjoyed the process of being on a, you know, Division I campus that's in your state and going through Coke Arena, enjoying the visit. And it just felt natural. I remember on the ride home, I told my dad, I was like, man, I want to do two things when I'm in college. One, I want Bob Knight to know who I am. Two, I want to, you know, make a run in the NCAA tournament. And we got about halfway down the highway and he's like, all right, you're going to Wichita State. And I was like, yeah, Bill's right. And that was it. Cut and simple.
Why'd you want Bob Knight to know your name? He was on TV at the time.
It was like right when Bob Knight had shifted and started calling like the big Monday games in the Big 12.
Yeah.
And just really enjoyed, you know, listening to him, obviously historical coach, just really kind of enjoyed the, you know, the sound of his voice calling games, and was always just a fan.
How long is that drive?
A little under 4 hours. To talk about tough weeknights for the folks being school teachers. Yeah. Man,
they made everyone
2-3 in the morning. I think they missed one game in my 4 years that I played. Cause it was,
did they come. So your freshman year, you redshirt, right?
Right. Yeah.
Did they come to the games even though you redshirted?
Yeah, I came to a couple games, you know, the major games, you know, Creighton at home, a couple non-conference games, but not regularly like they did those next 4 years.
What was that like for your redshirt?
The redshirt year was tough because we had 6 or 7 seniors, I think, on that team. So, I mean, I was getting bullied every day, turning it over, questioning like, man, is this for me? Like every athlete, when they make the jump from, you know, high school to college, I feel like unless you're, you know, McDonald's All-American, you go through a somewhat of a struggle.
Even McDonald's All-Americans. I'm like, right. Like I was not a McDonald's, but I was the All-American. I was, you know, like slightly below, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just telling you, like, I got my ass kicked every day in practice. And you're like,
we had like 6 guards that, I mean, probably 4 or 5 of them were pros the next year and still are pros. So, I mean, we had a really good team that year. Lost an NCAA tournament to VCU first round. So, I mean, great learning experience. Like, I never thought playing a sport, you obviously learn a ton. But when you get to watch all the time and you're you know, the student of the game, like, you really can really dive in and learn a lot.
I would say the most I ever learned. So when I went to Notre Dame, and when I sat out a year at junior college, and like the irony to it was I wasn't even considering Oklahoma State, but the Suttons, my dad had worked for Coach Sutton at Creighton, like back in the '60s. Mm-hmm. So Sean called me cause he sat out for a year and didn't go anywhere either. So I didn't go anywhere. I went to junior college and I practiced with the junior college team, but didn't play. Mm-hmm. And then I actually helped, I coached some during games, and then I helped out my high school some. And, but Sean had said, like, you should watch games and watch them now. And after you played college basketball for a year, yeah, and it's a completely different experience.
Really opened your mind up.
Yeah. You're just like, oh, here. Shit, that wasn't supposed to happen.
Right. Exactly.
And so, and then after playing, I played overseas for a couple years. I did a couple games, but my first year of calling games for ESPN, I remember doing some games and thinking to myself, God, I wish I did this when I played. And then I went back and played in France after championship week. This is in 2003. And I remember, or 2002, yeah, maybe 2003. And I remember thinking like, oh, this is crazy how much easier it is. Cause you see things like, now you've played for 4 years.
You think the
play professionally floor, and you see them, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. That you feel like the floor doubles in size.
Yes. Yes. You know where everything's supposed to be. It slows down. Yeah. Okay. So you start to play your freshman year and you're good. Your team, again, pretty talented, really talented. And when you broke your foot, was it just sore? Was it swollen? It was like I'm going to say like 18 games into junior conference play. How did you know you broke your foot?
So the tricky thing to this, it was the 10th game in. We just lost at Tennessee. And to get a medical red shirt, I think that was the number that you couldn't play, right? So that's part of the story of why I tried to, you know, make a comeback that season. I had a stress reaction in my navicular. Worst bone in your foot, they say, at least from the doctor's perspective, that you want to injure. It has like the least amount of blood flow in your foot. So I'm getting all this information. I'm like, man, I just sat out an entire year last year, and now you're telling me I got to sit out another, you know, 12 weeks. And just as a 20-year-old, you're just like obviously disappointed, but trying to, you know, keep it glass half full, like, all right, you know, I can be supportive, I can learn another year by watching. And it was about to 12 weeks, the way it fell was right on the NCAA tournament. I'm like, all right, let's try and push for 11. Because the way the Valley was working back then, tournament
working Valley, always, Matt. Yeah, it was earlier.
It was always a week early. So we're like, man, we got to push this. You know, let's try 11 weeks. let's try 11 weeks. And our trainer, of course, is like, man, I don't know. Like, I don't want to put this pressure on Ron. Like, this is his body. So we end up coming back. Oh, I think my first live practice was the Monday before the Valley tournament. And felt fine, good, good to go. And then just took off in the Valley tournament. Played well against Missouri State the first round. We beat Illinois State in the semis and then ran into my buddy McDermott in the finals and probably played them the best we had played throughout the season. And even it's crazy to say, but even losing to Creighton, I think, aided us going forward into that NCAA tournament.
So you guys play Pittsburgh. And do you remember the call that kind of changed that game?
The Pittsburgh game?
Yeah.
Pretty sure it was when I got elbowed, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're guarding Lamar Patterson.
Yeah.
He goes, but he actually went by you.
And, yeah.
And he chicken winged you.
Just grazed me right across the cheek. Right. Yep.
And I actually went crazy calling the game just because he didn't do it on purpose. But no. The way the rule was written, like that was a flagrant.
Yep.
And so it gave him his third foul and they couldn't really score. And so you guys made your free throws and then, you know, they just kind of, you guys just took off, just boat raced him.
Yeah. After the, I think after the first TV timeout in the second half is when we started taking our run there.
Yeah. And then what was kind of fascinating was, I can't remember if that was the first game and then the Gonzaga was Gonzaga after you or before? Were they after you?
You called both their games. You called the Pitt game.
No, I know. But I'm saying, did Gonzaga play after you guys?
Gonzaga played after us against Southern. And we're like,
yes. And it was tied with 4 minutes to go.
I'm like, they're about to lose.
I know. And Spiro Didis is my partner, right? And this is my first NCAA tournament game, so I'm calling. And we're sitting there and there's like 4 minutes to go. And you know how that deal gets, where all of a sudden you were the one seed, you know, the next year, where all of a sudden
that pressure,
everybody's going crazy and they're Southern fans. Right?
Everyone in the crowd, every single person.
Yes, and is a Southern fan. Like, and we're sitting here going, we're gonna call the first 16-1 upset. Holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. Like, all right, keep it together, let it breathe, keep it together, right? And Gonzaga ends up winning the game. And what do you remember about prepping for Gonzaga?
I just remember prepping for, was it Ryan Anderson and then Olynyk? Like, we felt like those two were just dominant that entire year. Those two were like, we pretty much put our whole defensive strategy against them. Our backcourt was pretty solid defensively that year. Obviously, Pangos was pretty talented. I forget the other kid that they
Gary brought. Bell, but he got hurt.
Yeah, he's hurt. That's right. And then other than that, like, we felt pretty confident in the backcourt. So we focused a lot on those two bigs. And man, they were pretty dominant, I'd say, till like the 12-minute mark is kind of when we made our little run in the second half. And everything was clicking, man. Like, even if we had like a bad possession, we'd somehow manage to, you know, get a foul or get a, you know, I'm picturing Fred, you know, isolating Stockton right there by our bench, like lost the ball, just everything clicking. Corner three by me, you know, the ball was moving. We got some good stops.
What did you think of Fred at that point?
I knew he was here. He was definitely here. He's always been the guy, like mentally knows the game, mentally tough. He was raw that first year, especially defensively. I remember Coach always, you know, challenging him in practices. And that's where I felt like he might have struggled a little bit his freshman year. And coming off the bench and, you know, backing up Armstead was huge for him because Mal had been, maybe not in the NCAA tournament, but Mal had been in some big, you know, college games throughout his career.
So he was old and confident.
Right, right, absolutely. Nothing to lose, really, you know, coming to the NCAA tournament. So I definitely think Fred learned a lot from him. But, yeah, Fred was a little raw, but obviously blossomed the more we got to play together.
When you close your eyes and you think about the Final Four, what do you remember most?
This might sound funny. I'm checked out of the game. I got my first breather and I remember just sitting. It's like it's kind of sitting at a table, right? You're sitting in your seat, the floor is elevated. And I remember looking like up into the crowd, because that was the first time I've ever played in a, you know, a football stadium. And I'm like, man, every seat in this place is full. And I, there's so, people so far away, you couldn't even see them move. And I'm thinking, why the hell would someone pay $400 to sit way the hell up there and watch a Final Four? And the second memory was that was the first Final Four in my lifetime that I never watched, because I was in it. Yeah. Like, how special is that for, you know, a kid from where I come from? And just that resonated, that that first game that we played there.
If you could do, if you could do something different,
what would it be? I knew you was going to ask that.
Well, I'm just at, because again, yeah, like you are, it's, you know how you watch it, like, right, you don't remember the wins. You remember some of the wins, but you remember the losses and the moments like, oh shit, if I would have just done this, right?
Yeah. The
so
three at the top of the key for sure.
Huh?
The three at the top of the key in the second half. For sure. For sure.
Did it feel good?
I don't know, man. I was just too unselfish. Dumped it down to our big, and he got fouled. It put Dang in foul trouble, but that could have been it right there, man. That could have been it. Carl Hall's here in town, and we go play pool on Thursday nights. He brought that up the other day. He's like, Bang, man, we could change one thing. I wish you would have shot that, man. Like, yeah, trust me. I know, bud. Shoot your eight ball. Let's get this game over. Come on.
Is he good at pool?
Not bad. He can't get baked, but he's pretty solid. He's pretty solid. He's doing good too. He's doing good.
I mean, that whole story, like, he shouldn't have been playing basketball, right? Like, dude had a heart problem. I mean, literally, like, heart problem. And they're like, should he be clear? Like,
yeah, give him another year. Come on, we need him.
Pretty amazing though, right? Like, the guy literally is not supposed to play basketball ever again. And somehow his mom was the one who pushed for it. Right. Yep. Mom's like, let's find a doctor who's going to clear him.
Yep.
That's how at least the story was told to me. That's pretty incredible.
He was bought in about getting that last year with us. He was the heart and soul of our team that year. If you said Wichita State, everything really stemmed from, you know, his approach and his physicality for sure.
Is there a stronger bond with that group or the undefeated group the next year?
Man. The undefeated group was, you know, basically we all had minutes on the, you know, the Final Four team. And I don't say this lightly. I think the bond was better maybe in the undefeated year. Because I think Tekel Cotton started flourishing, and he was the heart and soul of our team and really brought us in together. And plus, it's kind of weird going through a season and not being able to learn from a loss. You know, those moods and practices after loss, like, you know, a tough practice. Like, we never once.
Always like, there's usually, I remember, here's, this will probably help you or make your point even clearer. My first exhibition game at Notre Dame, we lost to some German professional team. Mm. And it, like, we had film the next day, like 7 a.m. And they had some big centers, like 7 foot. And he was, every time somebody come through the lane, he just club them. And, you know, John McLeod, the late John McLeod was like, Notre Dame, we're immature. Notre Dame, this is soft. Somebody hits your guard, you hit him right back. Right. Next time. All right. So, what happens after you lose is everybody gets reamed in film, and then usually somebody gets, there's always a fight, right? The guys that get yelled at, they're tired of getting yelled at. They're tired of, you've been around each other a while, and there's like a fight. Like, I remember Oklahoma State, you lose a couple games in a row and there's a fight. Did you have any fights? I've never been on a team where there was no fight. There was no fights ever in practice. The undefeated year, did you have any fight?
Undefeated year? I can't remember.
What's there to fight over? You're kicking everybody's ass.
I don't recall any fights. We might have had a couple, you know, situations of Final Four year, because we lost like 3 straight, I think, in Valley play, which is just a big no-no, especially when a couple of them are at home. So that year was a little chippy, but no, after that, it was pretty smooth sailing in our locker room.
What do you remember about the Kentucky game?
I swear no one could miss. If they didn't beat us on the glass, then it was game over. They just, when you play Julius Randle at the three, I mean, holy moly. And then, I mean, people weren't shooting the three, I don't think, like that as they are now, especially in the NBA. But, you know, the biggest thing I remember in that game is Julius Randle checking into the game, and he was playing the three, and we had Evan Wessel on him. And I look over at their bench, and Calipari's just like, post Julius. That was the play call every time down. I'm just like, oh, God. I feel bad for you, Wessel. Hang in there, man. Yeah, they just killed us on the glass. James Young, twins, all had good games. I mean, we have, you know, Fred had a decent look at the end. All you can ask for in those situations. Iconic basketball game to this day. You know, grateful to be a part of.
It's amazing because I went from, like, your guys' biggest supporter. And then at the time, like, one of the things that I feel like I always have done is, like, you can't tell if I'm a fan of somebody or not a fan of somebody. And my thing on you guys being a one seed was, like, you just hadn't played in the Big 12. You hadn't, right? So there was no metric for it, right?
And this is what's funny. God forbid you do your job, right? You got to, you know, you got to give analysis on situations like that. And you're not going to please both sides of whatever comes out of your tweet or mouth, right?
Well, I will tell you there are many who do that job who just everything is great. And it's the
Jay Douglases of the world.
I think Jay's a little more credit. I would say Vital.
Okay.
And generally CBS, like I was at CBS, I was like the first guy to ever like question things or whatever. And they were like, What are you doing? Why are you so negative? Like, I'm not negative, I'm just being kind of honest. Like, not everything is the greatest ever.
Right. I think our best win that year was probably at St. Louis.
I called that game.
Yeah. And they dropped some games like the A-10 that they shouldn't have, and that hurt us probably.
Right. Because then you start doing the, well, who did St. Louis beat thing? Where I was like, I was there. I think it was either NFL playoff Sunday. It wasn't Super Bowl.
It was because the Rams were in town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't very many people there. And
it was a Saturday afternoon too. It was Sunday. That's why you called it, because CBS called Sunday games. Yeah.
No, but it was a sports network game. It wasn't a CBS game. But I remember, I distinctly remember that game, and I was like, "Look, I was there," and it just didn't feel as though it was just. It's a hard metric to what would you do in the Big 12? What would you do in the Big 10? Because you have a bad night in the Big 12, and they got a pro who beats you, right? Whereas you do it in the Valley, and you guys had three pros.
Right.
So, you know, you were able to withstand any sort of bad night. But what is that like to win the Valley Championship and you have zero losses, like the perfect season? What is – and, you know, in high school you even lost one game.
Right.
People do it in high school, not in college. What was that like?
I thought it was pretty special, obviously. I mean – I think the last team to do it was Greg Anthony with the UNLV team, and Bobby Knight's team with Keith's miracle shot.
Yeah. No, that wasn't Greg Anthony. They lost to Duke in the semifinals.
Okay. Well, they went undefeated in the regular season, though.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean.
And St. Joe's went undefeated in the regular season, lost in the A-10 tournament. Yeah. That was with Delonte West and Jameer Nelson. And those guys.
Yeah, so
but you guys
being able to be, you know, every time you hit 27-0, like, you know, having a theme for this one, and then 28-0, and then getting compared to St. Joe's, getting compared to UNLV, like, that's pretty cool, man. Like, those are, you know, historic seasons by some great players and teams.
So you lose, okay, but you've been to a Final Four. You've had an undefeated regular and conference tournament season. And then you're like, do I go pro? What was the decision like?
I didn't put a whole lot of decision into it. I probably should have maybe put a little more decision into it in my sophomore year. Because statistically wise, I think my sophomore and junior year were two of my better years. We did the whole NBA eval situation. They didn't have the thing where you could, you know, test the waters, so to say, until my – I don't even think they had that my junior season. So I really didn't put a whole lot of thought into it. You know, we knew Klee was, you know, probably going to get drafted. I didn't really know how the agent situation was. Like, I didn't even know how that process even became probable. Like, I didn't even know what the steps were to, you know, hiring an agent. So I was pretty raw on that, in that aspect, but maybe should have done a little more homework prior. But kid coming from Scott City, I don't really have plans to be an NBA player once I got to Wichita. So wasn't too studied up on the situation.
So what was Marshall really like? Your experience?
My experience, just obviously you've been through it, and this is why I wanted to get on this, you know, platform with you and talk about this, because you've obviously played college sports, college basketball, like just super intense, right? Like, has his ways of coaching basketball, and he has his system in play. He wants you to buy in to his system, keep the game simple, play defense, rebound. Like, he's pretty simple concepts. Obviously, we can get into the whole, you know, situation that happened. Like, the big thing right now is, like, we're the snowflake era. Like, we can't handle, you know, being yelled at.
Hard coaching.
Well, yeah, we can't handle hard coaching, which, I mean, everyone's different, Doug, right? Like, you know, Fred, me, Klee, others can handle it. You know, some players can't. Simple as that. If you can't buy into what he wants you to do, like, he's going to hang a cloud over you each day and tell you, like, he's trying to hammer this into you. So, like, players are going to struggle, right? They're going to transfer. Well, last year, just so happens, not 8-9 guys leave. You know, now it's a snowball going down a hill, right? You've seen Jeff Goodman's stories, you know, telling he's diving into everyone. Like, he told me, I talked to him a couple weeks ago. He's like, all I did was call one guy from that transferred, right? And he leads me to another guy. Now it's just like a snowball effect. Well, you know, coach, you know, he is a hard coach. And, you know, do I respect him? Absolutely. He's been great to me and my family. That's from my, you know, my opinion. These other players that are coming out, I respect them for telling their stories. Were there days where I thought coach, like, crossed the line? For sure. Like, that happens. And what they did here with, like, the committee and stuff. And this is the first time I've been coming out public, by the way, about the situation. He had obviously made a statement. I think his first statement was, like, kind of like the political correct statement. Obviously him and his people in his circle, like, wrote it out, and, like, he didn't really touch base on, like, the Shaq Morris altercation and some of the other things that obviously were top of the headline. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, maybe, you know, maybe he's just going to, like, come forward and be like, I did these things. I apologize. Like, you know, Wichita loves this man, like, loves him. So, like, I'm thinking, like, okay, maybe he's going to understand, like, okay, man, you know, it's a different era of kids. Like, I crossed the line on a couple of things. I apologize. And, you know, I'll do whatever I got to do to, you know, stay with my team. Cause in reality, the priority is not to worry about, you know, things. The last thing he as a coach wants to do is worry about things he might have messed up on in the past. Priority is the kids that are on campus right now trying to prepare for this, you know, this season, because the season was supposed to start tomorrow. And, you know, I'm waiting. I'm sitting here waiting. I'm like, all right, he's going to, you know, make a statement. Nothing. And then, you know, the Shaq Morris story, you know, makes headlines. And, you know, I was there when all this was going on. Like, I'd seen him, you know, kind of do some things here and there. But the Shaq altercation, you know, it's just sad, unfortunate, obviously. You know, I was in that practice. There was a bang, bang play at the rim. You know, Shaq, one of our three men was starting at the time, Zach Brown. Bang, bang play. Shaq was, you know, late to it, like a help side action, went up to the rim. Zach Brown falls down. You know, Marshall just, like, flips the switch, man. Like, obviously really upset. Like, you know, this is a starter. Kind of just goes in on Shaq. And I'm just sitting there like, God, man, like, just super uncomfortable. And you could hear, like, a needle drop. in the gym. Like, just, you've been in those practices, like, super uncomfortable. Like, you don't even feel like playing basketball the rest of the day. Marshall kicks him out of practice and, like, follows him out into the concourse. So we're all like, man, just like at, you know, just shook. What the hell is going on? So late, you know, practice ends, we go down to the locker room, and come to find out, Shaq tells us, you know, he got hit. And we're like, man, like, Shaq and Marshall's relationship was never like really, you know, tight knit. And like, they had some tension. And as you know, tension, you know, continues to grow. Well, you know, just so happened to be that day where, you know, it got to a point where it was just, you know, bad. And a couple other players in that locker room said they seen it, and we're like, man, like, just felt like just wrong. Like, felt like kind of, damn, shaky. Like, just didn't really know as a 21-year-old how to handle this situation. We're a good basketball team. We don't want the spotlight of, you know, the prestigious Wichita State Final Four, undefeated, Sweet 16 resume to turn into, damn, Coach Marshall, you know, hit a player. Like, that's why Shaq, I think, waited, you know, all these years to now circle back on the situation. Because, like I said, their relationship was never tight-knit. So for me, kind of being back in Wichita after I got back from Russia, like, it was just like one of those situations, like, talking to my parents, I'm like, you know, some of these things in the first report, I'm like, Dad, man, some of these things like happened. He's like, well, but you are not Ron Baker as a pro without, you know, Greg Marshall and his staff. So it puts me in a situation like, wow, how do I handle this? Like, I don't want to go public, because I don't really feel like if I went public whenever it came to light, let's say a month ago, like, what's it going to do? Like, I say, you know, some of these things happened. Okay, now it looks like, man, Ron Baker's not loyal to
Greg Marshall,
his coach, you know, like the guy that, you know, made him out to what he is. But at the same time, as you know, a teammate's a teammate, man. Yeah. Like, I personally don't think Shaq would make this, you know, stuff up that day in the locker room. Like, what's in it for him? Like, he's not going to make up something like that, at least in my eyes. And like I said, a couple other guys seen it happen. So just a weird situation, man. It's sad, disappointing. I know Coach Marshall is probably going to watch this, and like, he has so much love in this city. Like, for me, I think to make things right, I think he should have just, you know, bitten the bullet and said, man, you know, I really messed up. I let whatever it is get to him. Like, I love winning so much. Like, just do the right thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And just, it would have cleared the smog around this town like this. And regardless if the committee made their decision to let him go, at least the tension between, oh, these are, you know, snowflake era kids, like, they can't handle it. I mean, all that goes away. Or, you know, I mean, it's obvious why none of us players in that gym that day, like, went public. Because we don't want that feeling of, man, like, those guys are just not loyal enough to their coach type of vibe.
So really, I'll give you a personal, it's not exactly the same, but there's some similarities there. So I'm at ESPN and Coach Sutton has a car crash. Now it's on a Friday night and they're supposed to play the next day at Texas A&M. And I have a former teammate named Alex Weber, his wife Denise, who was one of our athletic trainers. She was like a student trainer at, you know, when they first met, whatever. So, I mean, like, it's one thing to have just like a wife you met, like, but she was there when we were there. Right.
Sure.
So, coach gets in a car crash and we had like Friday night games, random Friday night game. And, we do a break into the game. And, so Alex calls me and he's like, yeah, this is bad. He's like, you should call Denise. I was like, is he going to die? She's like, just call Denise. So I called Denise, and she's the vice president of the hospital. And I go, how is he? She's like, he's going to be okay. I was like, well, Alex said it was bad. She's like, it's terrible. I go, well, you just said he was going to be okay. Like, no, it's terrible. I was like, oh, was he drinking? She's like, it's really, really bad. That's all I can say. So then I call a friend of mine who, my old neighbor, that when I was, we had like a house, we called the palace. It was like 3-4 bedrooms, like one bath. We all lived together. Alex was my roommate. Our neighbor was a cop. So I called the cop and I was like, hey man, what happened with Coach Sutton? He's like, it was like they all got like a something to read. He's like, man, it's really bad.
Yeah.
He's like, I go, was he drunk? He's like, I can't say what happened. He's like, I don't know, you know, like he hasn't been charged, whatever, but you should get the police report. So, you know, like anyway, it wasn't until that Wednesday that they had a press conference. They announced that he was drunk and he took immediate leave from the program on that Wednesday. Now I had been talking to them the whole time. And on that Wednesday, I was actually in Vegas. My wife was pregnant. My brother's wife was pregnant, a sister-in-law. And I was calling the game like the next day, San Diego State UNLV. And it was his game. He was an assistant coach. So we planned this trip. Like we're going to get together. We're going to get a bunch of food and try and decide the names of our kids. And I got to go do Sports Center because my coach had a DUI. And, you know, I'm forced to comment on it. 6 months prior to that, Bob Huggins had a DUI. And I was like, man, you can't be a coach and have a DUI, right? Like when you're representing the school. So now I'm in this, okay, am I disloyal if I say, hey, I love Coach Sutton. I love that man. He's done amazing things for me. He's even after this been, he was a remarkable mentor towards me. The things he taught me and the bond we have as players. And you know how, and I'm sure there's some of this too, but part of their psychology is they make it you against them, players against coaches.
It's almost like a motivation.
Yes. Yes. They're like, why are these guys such assholes? We hate them. But there's some kind of fucked up psychological thing where they like make you, and then it's us against them. Yep. And it makes it so that you're much closer. Right. Yep. So there are days when you're like, I hate that guy. I hate that. Yep. Like, you hate all those coaches. And then at the end of the day, you're like, okay, I kind of got it. You know, I kind of get it. For the next year, I was like persona non grata in Stillwater. Because I was disloyal. And I was like, the ultimate act of loyalty to me is saying, hey, coach is wrong here. Like, this is wrong. I love you, but you're wrong. You can't do that. You can't be the highest paid member of a faculty and be on your way to meet the team plane and be drunk. And he's a recovering alcoholic. Like I understand. I want him to get healthy, but you can't be the head coach and do those things.
Yeah. Right? But you're being loyal and truthful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And you can still like, I would guess like you still care for Greg Marshall. You love the man. Right.
Right.
But he was wrong. And also wrong to put you in a position where you had to not say anything at the time or even now. Like it's a really hard thing because he hasn't come out and go like, hey, you know what? I did some things. Cause I think the part you can never put your hands on a kid. That's been a rule. Obviously, that's what cost Bob Knight his job in Indiana.
Yeah.
But the language stuff, you know, I know that it reads as remarkably insensitive.
Yeah.
But it's a basketball team and shit is the rules are different.
Right.
Right. So I don't, that stuff doesn't bother me that I'm, you know, and you can, and I think you can walk
it
back.
It might not bother me and you, but my point is it might bother someone else because we're not in their head. Right.
Right.
Like we're talking, you know, psychiatric stuff, but it's a thing, man.
Yes. Yeah. I mean like about getting on your horse or whatever, but there's and sometimes like you, but you can cross the line and then dial it back. Be like, yo, I call a kid in. I was out of line. I apologize. I was sarcastic, you know, because we're all kind of sarcastic. A lot of us are sarcastic assholes. My thing with Greg was this: I never saw the level of abuse or ever putting hands on a kid. Mm-hmm. But at that St. Louis game, this is God's honest truth. Who's the athletic director at the time? Same athletic director.
The St. Louis game would have been Sexton or Boatwright. We're both AD and then assistant AD at the time.
I think Boatwright, the assistant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was there we're walking in the hall and he introduced himself. And I was like, oh, good to meet Greg's boss. He's like, we all work for Greg. Right. And, and there's just a way, like, look, Greg Marshall, when he was at Winthrop, I covered their games. He went to 7 NCAA tournaments. Right.
You're
right. Him and his wife were lovely. And they used to hang out with me at Final Fours. And like, basically he couldn't get a job because he took the College of Charleston job and changed his mind. He couldn't get the bigger job. And he did have some bad parts of his reputation, whatever. And so I had a long relationship with them, but you could see some of it brewing in that he just, you feed a guy's ego enough mm-hmm. and you feed a guy and a guy like I would guess to this moment, he doesn't think he did anything wrong. That's why you didn't see an apology.
Right.
And that's just the part that you can walk back and you can have a legit, hey man, I was wrong. I was feeling myself some, and I think that would, it just sucks because I don't think it does, but to some, it may put a bit of a cloud over what was an amazing 5 or 6 years of basketball from one program. And he was very much responsible because he is a marvelous. Sure.
But do you feel where I'm coming from? If you would have just like owned up to not at all, but for sure the Shaq situation, because that's what, I mean, let's, you know, call a spade. That's why he's not here. Like if that story is not in the first article,
right?
I mean, everyone would just kind of put it on the, you know, get swept under the rug kind of deal. Like he would have put out a first statement and then.
Can't put your hands on a kid.
No, no place for it. Simple as that.
And and you know, Shaq obviously left. What do other teams?
Shaq finished his 4 years at Wichita.
See, but now it's like,
so yeah,
can't come back, right?
He lives here.
He does.
And like, I'm trying to get it to where like that's not an issue. Like, we shouldn't have to worry about Shaq. Should not have to worry about going out in public and people looking at him like, man, that's that guy that called Jeff Goodman, like. He shouldn't have to worry about that, right?
No.
That's terrible.
No. That's like a societal issue, right? Like we use these terms. If you're the person who saw something or something was done, we call you a rat, a fink, a snitch, right? Like, hey, I wasn't the one who did the thing that was wrong.
Right.
I was the one who did the thing wrong too. And I actually didn't say anything for years so that my team could live out, you know, their dreams and 100%. Their
goals. Their team was arguably just as good, if not better, the next 2 years they were there. You don't want to come forward then and ruin the vibe or the morale of what you got going. Does that make sense? Right.
Yes. I totally understand. There's a guilt to it. Right. Because you do, I think they think, I don't know what people think of college kids. You know, where they don't have the wherewithal, whereas most of the guys that I played are pretty smart, pretty understanding. They know, hey, let me just get through this and use it to benefit me post career.
Right.
I
do think like there is plenty of time for things to like make amends. Cause like this, they're like, we already seen like Wichita community already come to like a pact, let's say, and, you know, support coach. Like, you know, he's done successful things. I spoke with Tom Devlin. I spoke with Jeff Johnson out at Flint Hills here in town, big, you know, big supporters of, you know, Wichita State and coach. And they're like, man, Ron, we really support this man. Like, think of what he's done these past 14 years. It's remarkable. I'm like, you know, I totally agree with you. I'm in agreement with you, but guys, like what he did that day, like, I mean, it's not right, you know?
Right. And it makes it more not right to not offer any sort of apology or olive branch or ability to discuss. I mean, honestly, I kind of feel like you and Fred are the only guys that can.
Right. And that's why this is why we're doing this right now. I mean, I hope it gives some clarity, you know, to the city. Those people that are supporting Marshall, they have every right to, and I totally get where they're coming from. But I want those supporters to come together and understand why Shaq did what he did. And now we can, you know, turn the page. The committee made their decision. Coach resigned. He did his thing. I really think him coming forward would bring all this tighten it or like it used to be around these parts. And we would just, you know, move on together, move on together. Yes. Right. Yes. Instead of kind of being this thing where, you know, I said,
I will tell you that now here's the hard part. Okay. So I have a really good relationship with Mike Boynton. I think he's a very good man. And Scott Sutton's on the staff, and there's a lot of orange on that staff. But when your coach leaves and a new regime takes over, it's never the same to go back. It just isn't. Because
you're talking as far as going,
when you have kids and you come back and it's Ron Baker Day and they put your number up there in the rafters or whatever, like it sucks because like I'm forever envious of the Michigan State guys, the Duke guys, the Kansas guys, because Bill's been there long enough now. But I think and Bill did a great job because he actually hired Barry Hinson to kind of help with it. But when the I think the best part of the whole thing is when you go back and people not just remember, but the coach calls you in front of the team like, hey, man, this guy was a hell of a player. Let me tell you, I recruited him. He did this. He won this game for us. Like it's like that's all you really require when you're a player is just like, hey, man, just remember some of the shit I did and how hard I worked and how much I bought into the program. And that's a really hard one when your coach is gone and when they clean the regime out, you know, which inevitably to this point hasn't happened, but at some point it probably will. It's interesting because Jans, who I like, and I know he recruited you, like, right. You know, he had his deal at Bowling Green. And right. After you guys beat Gonzaga, you know, he had his spit cup and he was gone, right? Just, we were all just gone. Like it was, and I was like, man, that guy, that drink went down a little too quick. Right. But he's a hell of a dude and a really good coach.
Right.
And obviously he's bounced back with the New Mexico State deal, which is great. But it's fascinating to me because like, I think sometimes we get caught up in I did stupid shit at Notre Dame. Right. Never. Like we have bad moments. We do bad things, but it's the golf analogy. I'm still under par for my life. Right. And I think Greg Marshall could still be very much under par, like really, really under par. If he would just come out and go like, hey man, that was a triple bogey. I'm embarrassed by it. I shouldn't have done it. I feel really bad. And you know,
so they were doing their investigation right on campus and I wasn't even going to get involved. I was walking the fence line, trying to be supportive. And then coach comes out with a second statement saying, I've never struck a player, put hands on a coach, like word for word. I'm just like, what is going on right now? Like, this isn't even making sense. Doug, I'm telling you, we had two rules when we were here. We had no curfews. We had nothing. Like, we had two rules. The first day you walk on campus, you get a sheet, and the two words on there the words on there say, don't lie to me and don't steal from me. That was it. So I'm thinking, like, man, my freshman year that he said those things, and now he's coming out with this? Like, it was bad. It was, like, disappointing and just, like, it just rubbed me the wrong way. And then that's when I got involved on, like, I never went public, never said anything. I talked to one of the lawyers that was doing the investigation and I was truthful and I told my story of that day. And that's how I went about it. I didn't feel like it was right for him to try and turn the narrative on my teammate. Like that really, really hurt me. That was tough.
Is there any chance that Shaq isn't telling the truth?
There was other guys in the gym that day that seen it. It's bad. It's a bad deal.
And have you talked to him? Have you talked to Greg?
No. I think the last time I talked to him was, man, it was during the summer, probably July or August. And I think once the investigation started, he wasn't legally allowed to reach out to anybody that was involved or potentially going to get questioned in the investigation.
All right, I want to get to a couple things here real quick.
All right, let's knock them out.
What was it like to play in the NBA?
Everything I ever imagined times, or everything I've ever imagined and more. Like, just surreal.
Your first game at Madison Square Garden, do you remember who it was against?
I want to say Boston, maybe Boston or DC. Cause it was, you know, you play those Northeast teams in exhibition. I actually started the second half, had a pretty good preseason. I think that's kind of why I made the team, but yeah, just surreal. And not to mention, man, think of my teammates, Joakim Noah, all NBA player, Derrick Rose, youngest MVP, Brandon Jennings, 54-point performance in Milwaukee, Carmelo Anthony, Hall of Famer. Like, the list goes on. Like, just surreal. Like, looking around, like, holy crap. The only rookie that year that might have had a better situation was Kay Felder at Cleveland. Other than that, like, that's like a dream lineup for a rookie. Like, unheard of. It was remarkable.
When you made the who told you made the team?
Phil called me, or Jamie Matthews, actually, one of our player personnel. He called me into Phil's office. And Phil goes, "We're moving you from B team to A team, Ron." He made the team. You know, his Zen voice. Oh, it was great.
I played with the Lakers for a summer league 1 year. And then, like, I was in there a couple of their different camps, or free agent camps. And he would always call me Godfrey. Gilbert Gottfried. Gottfried, get in there. Gottfried. He knows what we're doing. You know. What was Melo like?
He was cool, man. He takes a lot of heat because he's just, you know, easy target for the media when you're the best player on the Knicks. Like, obviously the media is gonna grab at you, but you know, he did the little things for me as a vet, took me out on my birthday in Miami, like things of that sort. Wasn't hard on me as a rook. I didn't have to do all the crazy things, you know, guys probably had to do when you were a rookie, but he was cool. D Rose was probably one of the most, you know, influential guys for me, because he was a guy that I could relate to, because, you know, he's not real vocal. He's more of the guy that, you know, leads by example and, you know, lives by his morals. Like, I really, really enjoyed being in the same locker room as him.
Craziest shit you saw, let's do on the basketball floor in the NBA. Like, this is such a different level than anything I've ever seen.
My second season, we're getting closer past All-Star break, and Milwaukee comes to town, and I'd never played against Giannis before. Like, knew what he was about. My rookie year, we played at their place. But I just played the fourth quarter. Didn't really have a ton of minutes against him. But him and Chris Middleton get a 2-on-1 fast break. And it's definitely third quarter. And, I mean, I know the alley-oop's coming, right? Like, I'm sitting on the bench. I know the alley-oop's coming. It's 2-on-1. And Tim Hardaway is the last guy back. And I kid you not. Like, he knows the alley-oop's coming, too. He kind of slides to the left and shades Giannis. Middleton's coming. Middleton throws it. I'm like, what the hell is he thinking? Like, he had a layup. Giannis jumps over. Like, I'm talking not like between the legs, like literally over Tim Hardaway, and dunks it. And I just sit there and I'm like, this is like something you've seen in like a movie. Like, this can't be
like real. Fake.
It was severely fake. Same game. Posts up in the mid post, and I think you tweeted at me. He posts up in the mid post and caught the ball and was just like taking his time, and then hit a step back on Lance Thomas to end the game. I'm like, oh my God. Like, this guy was different. And like, we would play like LeBron and those guys in the regular season, and like, they would never give us our best. And we never made it to the playoffs, so we didn't really know that type of caliber of competitiveness. My last story, that when I knew I was in the NBA, was my second year opening game. We're playing at Cleveland. They just dropped the banner. Michael Beasley and I are sitting on the bench, and he has a relationship with Bron from Miami. Well, we're up like 20-25 in the third quarter. And Beasley is standing up on the court, just letting Bron have it, just letting him have it. We shoot the first free throw. LeBron grabs the ball, gives it to the ref, and he starts walking towards our bench. He goes, "Bees, shut the F up. You know we're just scrimmaging for June." And then turns around and walks back. I was like, oh, man, I made it. This is real.
Okay, so you played for CSKA. I played in Russia, too. So that it's I'm intrigued by a couple of Russia. When you landed,
yeah,
what do you remember?
Just kind of dark, cloudy, muggy. And obviously the airport's not in the best part of town. And it was like an hour to get to the city. Like, it's just a cultural difference. Like, their vehicles are different.
Yeah.
You know, the highways are different.
Huichichai? Like, they want you.
Huichichai?
I don't want tea. I just.
Yeah, just ice water, bottled water. Yeah, just different.
My first game we played, we actually won the league when I was there. And I played for a team. It's now, I think, second division. You're all great. And we play on the road in St. Petersburg. And my two most vivid memories, actually three. One, we went out to eat, and I didn't know there was no Americans, other Americans on the team at the time. And I was just following these guys around, and they ordered food for me, and it was gross. And I was just, to have all this whole world going on and you not know anything that's going on, what they're saying is a really weird experience.
That was the biggest thing, was a language barrier, 100%.
And then, that night, so then we're playing, and it was like the first game, and I'd only practiced for like a week and a half. And the coach, Sergei Belov, who played in the 72 team, he turns and goes, "Doc." And I was like, I thought that was me. I hopped up to like go in the game or whatever, to like scoring table. And some guy like grabs me, like horse collar tackles me. He's like, "That's not, no, sit." You know, I was like, wasn't me. And then after the game, I played pretty good. After the game, some dude comes in. He's like smoking a cigarette. He goes, "Sneak, sneak." I was like, ice. I need ice for my knees. I need ice. Sneak. ice. They went outside. And again, remember, this is 2001. Okay. This is, so I'm sure now they have perfect ice machines and whatever, and STEM and all that other shit. But they went outside. They actually scooped up snow, put it in a plastic bag, or put it in like a bag, like a trash bag. And then you had like two trash bags of just real snow. And that was your ice.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I also remember I landed in Moscow at the big airport. I think Sheremetyevo is the name.
Yep.
And this was before cell phones, or there were cell phones, but I didn't have one, or it didn't work or something. And I had to transfer to another airport. And I'm like, how am I going to find this guy? And there was like Russian writing and a basketball. And I was like, that's me. That was it. And I got in a car, and I just remember being in this car driving through Red Square, thinking to myself, if he kills me and pushes me out the side, who's going to know?
This is it. See, I was with CSKA, so we were taken care of pretty good as far as like a pro player should be treated. The cultural difference mainly for me was just the language. Like, I couldn't go anywhere and like be myself. Couldn't show emotion. You couldn't relate to anybody. Like, that was tough for me. And because basketball lasts, what, 3 hours a day?
Yeah.
From 8 to 11. And then what? You know, you hop in with your driver who is somewhat bilingual. Really nice guy. But, I mean, is your best friend going to be your driver? Like, when you leave the
That's court? What mine was. We actually got a Russian tutor, so I could speak a little Russian.
Okay.
And then he was your driver. And I would hang out with Oleg. Oleg was my driver.
My driver took me to the mall. We got bedding. We did all that stuff together because, you know, no one else spoke English or spoke Russian in my situation.
So what now?
I had hip surgery 10 weeks ago, just from wear and tear, or from playing high school football, whatever the cause may be. deciding like it's time to probably hang them up. Started networking here in Wichita, getting my name out there. Got a couple things that I'm interested in. Would love to, you know, just to keep all doors open and kind of see where the wind blows me. I'd love to keep, you know, relevance in, you know, college or NBA sports, whatever that, NBA basketball, whatever that job line could be down the road. We'll just have to see.
Ever thought about baseball?
Baseball, calling some games with old Joe Buck.
No, playing.
Playing baseball?
Yeah.
They cut like 3,000 players.
Last there's no minor leagues. That's the problem. Like no minor leagues. And then now all the European teams, basketball teams already have a season and these dudes are waiting around for the draft. It is all screwed up.
It is nuts. Just the timetable of sports right now is bizarre. But, you know, everyone's getting affected. So I can't complain personally.
If you'd never play another basketball game, will that be okay with you?
Yeah, I'm happy. Three surgeries, man, in 4 years as a pro. Like, that's tough. That's tough on the body. I don't want to be your age and having to gimp around and not be able to.
You want to look as good as me. That's really what you want. Just better hair. That's what you want. Look as good as me. I mean, you have incredible hair. But now you've cut your hair, right? That was like your signature. You used to do the that terrible flat look. Then you did the fro. And now, you know, now you're kind of, you got a little Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
Very tight. Was that like a one on the side?
I'm going for the David Beckham now.
David Beckham.
Yeah, yeah. Just not as good as him at his sport as I was in my sport. But.
If 20 years from now, you got family, you got kids, what do you want? What's the moment of Ron Baker's career that you're most proud of?
Probably just realizing where I came from, where I grew up. And I really think seeing my jersey come down in the rafters will probably be one of the most like surreal moments.
It goes up in the rafters, by the way. It doesn't come down.
What's that?
It goes up in the rafters. You don't bring it down in the rafters. You go up.
Down,
though. Oh, okay. Yeah. Unfurl. Yes. I like that. That's a good point. Fair point. We'll meet in the middle there. I get it.
But yeah, just because, you know, you can put your whole college career into one and it'll be up in that, you know, the rafters. That's probably going to be the defining moment that I'll look back on the most.
Not the, I didn't take a three in the Final Four, open top the key. Instead, I was unselfish. I threw the ball inside and we got into foul trouble.
Yeah, we got the foul trouble.
High-low, coach. High-low.
That one, yeah, that one's, I already deleted that one from the memory bank.
Sorry, I brought it out of the trash. You hadn't emptied the trash. I brought it out. All right. Last thing. If somebody's in a small town, right? Like if somebody's in a small town and they have these dreams and aspirations. Now, look, none of them have, you come from a really athletic family. None of them have your athletic build, but what do you say to the kid who is in small town USA that feels, hey, I'm not on the AAU circuit. I'm not playing with the big enough teams. How would you go about making it? What's the secret to making it?
My personal experience, my biggest thing was picking role models. For me, was my dad was a high school basketball coach, and we had a good player that I looked up to. Clint Johnson was his name. Like, I always wanted to be like Clint growing up. Wanted to play basketball, be like Clint. Then I got a little older, like close to middle school, and I started watching Kirk Heinrich. It's like, you see role models, you want to idolize them, and then you start, you know, working, trying to be like them, imitate them, study them. Like, that was the biggest thing for me growing up. Because, like, obviously you said you gain the competitiveness maybe from your dad or you gain the skills from your mom. But, like, once you look up to someone, I think that's where you can start really, you know, idolizing, they say, your game after somebody. And when you start tasting success and seeing yourself do it, then that's when I really took off, I think. So, like, study your role models. Obviously, do the easy things, attitude, effort. Like, you can control those things. Use those daily. Just work hard, man. Like, you can't control maybe
How do you not lose your confidence?
I mean, that's here, right? Like, how do you not, like, how, like, you, if you're from a small town, like, you don't got anything to lose, right? I mean, you got to use, you know, your upbringing and the little things you learn, you know, from your peers. And I'm serious about that role model thing. That was so huge for me because we had like four kids in my first grade class growing up. Like, I didn't, you know, have, you know, a friend to go play one-on-one with. I didn't have, you know, guys to, you know, make it even a five players to go travel, right? So that role model thing was huge for me. Just picking a guy out, wanting to be like them, pursuing it, just keep going. That's the advice I can say that really, really propelled me to get where I was.
When you see the money that Fred signed for, what do you think?
Whoo, man, that's a lot of zeros. But as you know, you gotta be happy for stories like that, man. Because, you know, Rockford, Illinois to Wichita, then to Toronto, and, you know, being a face of, you know, about to be the face of a franchise, like, that's a real story. And he gives a platform to, you know, young kids to idolize. Like, it's like the perfect dream story.
Has he changed at all since when you first met him?
No, he wouldn't.
Like,
never.
When you text him, he didn't go, "Who dis?
Who dis?
Yeah.
Sorry, I got a new phone.
Your phone."
No, Fred's always going to be Fred, man. Humble, hungry. He don't even care about them 85 mil. He wants to win, and he'll be working for that next deal in 5 years. I guarantee it.
Well, look, I can't tell you how appreciative I am of your time, but more than anything, your honesty, especially considering everything that's going on where you are right now. And I mean this, one of my things is we're friends. So when I can help you, obviously you got a good feel for what you want to do, but let's stay in touch and we'll do another one in the next chapter.
Love it.
All right, brother. Have a good day.
Appreciate it, man. See you guys.
See ya. Okay. Didn't know that's where he was going to go. And it's one of these things where you can be reasonable about your coach and respect what he's done for you and know he's made mistakes and just wish that he would admit to said mistakes, but he hasn't. And it clearly really bothers Ron Baker. Anyway, I cannot speak highly enough for Ron Baker, the human being, the leader of a program that he no longer plays for, but he definitely represents and represents it quite well. By the way, if you love interviews like this, my show's a little different on radio. It's 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, Fox Sports Radio, foxsportsradio.com, the iHeartRadio app. It's called The Doug Gottlieb Show. In the meantime, send me your thoughts. Tweet this out. Send it to a friend. This is what really happened at Wichita State. That is what really happened with Ron Baker, how he came to be an NBA player and what it was really like for him to play there. Hope you enjoyed it. I sure did. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.